Today, we're looking forward to another slice of the Premier League, which currently has cherries on top, some half-baked business in the middle, and plenty of crumble down the bottom. Can Arsenal get their first point? Will City drop theirs? And, speaking of cherries, abroad, what's all this about Henri pushing his love over the Bordeaux line? It's the Totally Football Show. And joining you and me today, listener, I'm delighted to say we've got James Horncastle.
Hello.
Hi, James. The eerily prescient Julien Laurent.
Bonjour.
He's got some words he wants to say to Crystal Palace fans.
Yes.
And Richarlison.
Yeah. Not so much Richarlison, because I don't think he will keep that up.
Really?
That kind of form.
Okay.
And I still think they overpaid for him, but...
When he's keeping Neymar at the Brazil side.
Yeah,
James,
I'm sure.
Your words.
And Willian and Coutinho and all the rest. And Crystal Palace fan, I'm sorry if I didn't want to offend anyone. I like your club. I don't mind. I even sort of like your...
Do you still think Palace are going down, Jules?
CEO. I think I don't think it would be an easy season for them at all.
All right. We'll talk more about the real reasons for Jules' bizarre anti-Palace agenda later on. It's shocking stuff, though, listeners. Make sure you stay with us for that. And above all, for David Shoot For My Face Priest.
What?
Excuse me.
David,
even I've not heard this story.
Well, this is your goalkeeping.
Penalty. Yeah, I heard it last week. Monday. Yeah. Thanks for having me back anyway.
No, not at all. I enjoyed your piece, by the way, in the Sunderland Echo, where you were bemoaning the absence of physical contact from football. But I loved how the article kind of swiftly descended actually into a tribute piece to kind of great straight to DVD action flicks of the 90s.
I could have sworn that. Excessive Force would have been a Steven Seagal movie from the 90s.
Right.
Yeah. But it is actually a movie.
Is it?
From 1993, starring James Earl Jones.
Okay, yeah. Excessive Force.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. And you cite another film, which I've not seen, but I've watched a bit of after hearing, you know, little excerpts like this.
Karate is not to be used aggressively, but if I have no other choice...
No Retreat, No Surrender, which you reckon is probably the classic of the genre, is that right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
So what happens in No Retreat, No Surrender?
It's kind of like every other sort of martial arts movie, you know, like a bit like Karate Kid. It was a forerunner for Karate Kid, really.
So this was, I think, 86 this came out, and it features a debut appearance from...
Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Jean-Claude Van Damme.
He plays a Russian.
A favourite of yours. Some of the reviews I read online, not so enthusiastic. Van Damme is introduced in the ring as Ivan Krasinski, and then in the credits it says the character is called Carl Bresdin. I expect better from such a well-acted, high-quality production.
I'm eager to watch that now.
Yeah, no, you do. No Retreat, No Surrender.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power, the home of the Money Back Special. Keep listening to the end of the podcast to find out more.
Feet are going to be flying in the Premier League's dojo this weekend. It all kicks off, of course, at Wolves. Wolves hosting Manchester City. That sounds familiar.
Sergio Aguero for the City record books, out on his own. Oh, you bet, with a panenka.
That's right, everybody. That was the sound of Wolves taking City two penalties in the Carabao Cup. Sam Barr says, can you see a repeat performance of that? Well, no, because you'd have penalties in the Premier League. But, Julien, what are the odds on Wolves pulling off a major shock against the champions?
Still limited, I think. I just think City... You know, people said before the Arsenal game, for example, oh, maybe it's a good time to play City because it's the start of the new season, because, you know, they probably did their fitness work before the season to be at peak a bit later in the season, and not so much now. They're still working hard physically. And all those kind of things, which you know, would be true for a lot of big clubs. And yet, City seemed even stronger than they were last year. I think in that game against Wolves last year, there was probably a bit of complacency involved, and Pep rotated the squad for that game as well. So it was not, you know, the context was very different to this one there. And I think that Wolves have showed, so for all the good players they've had, and you know, obviously the momentum coming into the Premier League after so long and the season they had last year, I still think they showed their limits last weekend in that game, and that it would be very hard for them.
In the last two seasons,
yes,
the Premier League champions have lost when they've gone away to the winners of the Championship.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes, that's true. But also, Leicester losing to Burnley in 2016-17. Chelsea defeated 3-0 by Newcastle.
But they were not City.
Year.
They were like City are a machine.
Come on, this is the Premier League, Jules.
And the biggest difference is that they're going to be using a Nike ball and not a Mitre Delta ball.
Why is that the biggest difference?
Because that was a big gripe of Pep's last season.
Yeah, Pep was not happy.
He said they shouldn't use those balls in the AFL, and they couldn't kick the ball properly, and that's why the... I think it was 0-0 after 90 minutes.
Wolves should try and do what I believe this used to happen in Serie A, where one of the big clubs didn't like the ball, so they would kick it out of play, and then the ball boys would throw on a smaller ball which they would prefer to play with. What Wolves should do is kick the ball out of play, throw the Mitre Delta on, and then
even curving it a bit to make it look like an lucky one.
Yeah,
that's brilliant.
Yeah,
okay. They've conceded two goals in both their games so far against Leicester and Everton. So a busy afternoon perhaps in prospect for Rui Patricio, David.
Yeah, he hasn't really been given a chance to shine, but I watched the first game against Everton, looked solid, couldn't really do much with the goals, but it doesn't matter who they're playing against, what the score is, Wolves are just an entertaining sight to watch.
As for City, there's a lot of talk about them having a goalkeeping crisis, which they've taken steps to avert this following Claudio Bravo's season-long injury.
Yeah.
Poor chap. They've brought the name of the fellow they brought back from...
Aro Muric.
Thank you very much. Do you know much about him?
He's highly thought of, actually. He's probably ahead of Daniel Grimshaw, who's the current number two, sort of development-wise. So they sent him out to NAC Breda in Holland, to one of their sister clubs.
And of all the years, they actually get rid of Joe Hart.
Yeah. But do you know what? Their sort of philosophy now is to... In the summer, they could have brought in a Rob Green or get...
A Lee Grant.
Yeah, exactly. Could have brought in the best over 35 money could buy, but they didn't. They want... they've got a good sort of stock of good young keepers.
Okay.
And when they want to attract goalkeepers to the club, they want to be seen to be given a little bit more of a pathway rather than be stopped by a 40-year-old who hasn't played for 3 or 4 years.
How old's Richard Wright now? Isn't he their goalkeeping coach?
He's the assistant to Xabi Manchester, who's the goalkeeping coach.
Just pull the gloves on.
Imagine you received a call in the summer from Pep asking you to just like come and help.
Well, do you know what? That's what happened to Rob Green, though. Rob Green on the Friday morning was actually sat with his advisor sorting out his pension and his retirement plan and what he's going to do going forward.
I love the story that Matt Davis had when we were talking about Chelsea's training, and he said that Rob Green had said, yeah, one of the things that really attracted me to this move to Chelsea was the chance to experience Maurizio Sarri's training, like Rob Green approaching 40. Shall I take this Premier League call up? The training might be interesting. Yeah. Do you share Julien's pessimistic outlook on Wolves' chances of stopping City?
No. I think.
Why?
Well, just because I like the way that they play. Against Man City, are a different level to everyone else, of course, they are in the way that they play, but ordinarily the teams that they do play tight football, you get that chance to play against them as well. City maybe is a little bit different because the pressing game's so good as well, but I think they've got the players to be able to do that and to take advantage of anything, you know, if they do win the ball early, that to move it through the departments quickly. I like Moutinho and Neves in midfield. You think they would lack sort of any steal or sort of like any cover for the three settled defenders, even though Cody can move into the middle there to cover them both. But it's the two of them just on the ball, just in that Everton game, they're just a joy to watch.
James, City?
City, yes.
Okay, a couple of quick questions here, just on a City note. Steve Bridge says, with City having a crisis of keepers, what's the best outfielder playing in goal you've ever seen?
Carl Schutt, no question. Ex-Leeds, Sheffield Wednesday. I play with him at Darlington, and he came on twice with me. I got sent off once at Brighton after 30 minutes, and he kept a clean sheet.
It was a shutout.
It finished 0-0, very good. And good call.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I got taken off, I think, against Exeter.
Right.
I had 7 stitches in this eye, and he kept a clean sheet there.
Oh,
and it was magnificent against Brighton.
They still there. Right, okay.
Absolutely magnificent.
Brilliant. Amongst players that I might have seen in action...
When Rooney,
he scored the winning goal against Barcelona.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, I'm sure he did.
Okay,
yeah.
Leeds.
Carl Schutt. When Rooney is a very good goalkeeper.
Is he?
Yeah, he used to go a lot in Gores with when he was training with England, even with United. At the end of training, you know, when you mess around and stuff. Yeah, he used to be good.
I played with a guy called Robbie Winters. Do you know Robbie Winters?
Of Dundee United.
That's the one.
Yeah, Bramberger. Yeah, I remember.
I think it was the 2000 Scottish Cup final. Aberdeen against Celtic. We didn't go with the goalkeeper on the bench.
What?
I wasn't on the bench. I was up in the stand. And there was only three subs at the time. And Jim Leighton went off after 5 minutes with a... I think his jaw was broken in three places from Rod Wallace. And Robbie had to he spent 85 minutes in goal in a Scottish Cup final.
Wow. How did he do it?
Lost 4-0, to be honest. Yeah, to be honest.
Okay.
No happy ending.
Jules, what's the greatest outfield player going in goal story?
It has to be Mutti, the Ludogorets defender, who in the Champions League qualifier, when his goalkeeper was sent off, went in goal, and then through the penalty shootout, saved two pens, maybe? James, yeah. One or two for sure, and then scored the winner himself, which was, it must have been an incredible feeling.
Absolutely. Or, of course, the Chicago Blackhawks.
Oh, yeah.
The fan from the crowd. I feel we might be reprising a conversation we had
before
on the podcast last season. Let's move on then. After this, it's Liverpool-Brighton.
Did you think over our proposal, Mr. Stillwell?
Yes, I did. And I'm sorry you came all the way from New York for nothing. And I don't want to waste any more of your time.
Meaning?
I must decline your offer.
Ooh, the look Jean-Claude Van Damme just gave him.
That was a negotiation from the transfer window.
So, Zed Woodward.
Yeah, that's the sweet sound of No Retreat, No Surrender, which is available on YouTube, but full HD. I'm not sure copyright-wise how we are, but I'd get on that while you may. Since last time we spoke, Liverpool went to your friend's palace. And it turned out, Jules... It turned out, at least somebody knows what they're talking about, it turned out exactly like Sasha's prediction, 2-0, a win for Liverpool. James Milner with a penalty, Mane then late on, after Salah had kind of wobbled over a couple of times and Wan-Bissaka had been sent off.
It was a penalty. It was a horrendous defender.
The first one?
Sako.
The Sako on Salah,
defender.
Not for Roy Hodgson.
Yeah, Roy said we were caught... Caught by the decisions, or that
he went all. He almost went full Gigi Buffon on Michael Oliver. You know, suggesting he should be in the stands with his can of Sprite and his Fruit Loops.
But we'll talk about Palace and their performance, which wasn't without merit. Later on, when we touch on their game coming up this weekend, but in terms of Liverpool, what was more impressive, this kind of grinded out performance or all the whiz bang stuff against West Ham?
Well, I think it's encouraging that they can show two sides. Blow West Ham away, but also kind of grind out, kind of gritty win away at a place where they've occasionally had difficulty.
Yeah.
So I think Mane's finish was fantastic. I know it was late and Palace were looking for an equaliser, but the way he stays on his feet, to put that away, just magnificent.
It's typically the kind of game where they would have struggled maybe in the past to break the deadlock and to find a way of scoring or even creative chances. I thought they had, they had a lot of the ball, which we expected, but they find a way to create things. And I think Naby Keita would help a lot in that. I think James Milner's
form... What a turn that was on Aaron Townsend.
Oh, wow.
Pass as well, man.
Yeah. It's just... Yeah,
Van
so
Dijk
I think...
played really well as well.
Yeah, and he produced the header on the Crystal Palace, what was it, corner, which led to the breakaway move where... that was when Wan-Bissaka got sent off.
It's still very early, I think, to incorporate someone like Naby Keita. We look at City and say, okay, they're stronger than they were last season. They're already better, it looked like, what they were last season, which is, an achievement in itself, although it's just two games. But for Liverpool, there was always going to be like, okay, how you put Naby Keita in this team? Would you have Salah? There was a lot of questions as well to be answered. And it's still very early in the season, but it looks like already things are in place and can only improve from now on, you think.
Right. They've yet to concede a goal in the league, yet to use Fabinho as well.
Yeah, which is interesting. I think that
I don't understand that signing, Jules.
You don't?
You were a big fan of that.
I was a big fan.
No, I'm joking.
But I don't know if Klopp expected James Milner to be in that kind of form again. And maybe
That's whose place he'll take in the side, you think, is it?
No, I mean, it doesn't have to be him, because Wijnaldum, I don't think he's a proper number six, although he plays a lot in that position. He's played in the two games in that position. So I don't know if you can take Wijnaldum out and put Fabinho on or Henderson on, or if you take Milner, he's got so many options in that midfield. I just think those three have worked so well together so far that it would be crazy for Klopp to change anything now anyway. There's only one game per week. Why would you change that, the whole team? And I think you can expect that whole team to play again against Brighton and then see what happens there. But for Fabinho, it feels like, well, it's not his time yet. And his time will come at some point. But so far, the three, Wijnaldum, Keita, and Milner have just been so good, I think.
Yeah. Next up, Saturday tea time. It's a visit from the Seagulls to Anfield. Last three meetings, David, between these two clubs. 4-0 to Liverpool, 5-1 to Liverpool, and in the FA Cup, 6-1 to Liverpool. Yikes.
Home winner. But it, just going back to the, you know, talk about the Van Dijk and especially Alisson, people have been sort of creaming over Alisson's passing range. I was talking to Andy Heaton from the Anfield Rap, and I quite often chat to him about sort of goalkeeping, particularly sort of the situations at Liverpool. And he was talking about, I can't remember if it was the first half or the second half, but he said he was sat right on the edge of one of the boxes, and he says it was amazing to watch. It's something that they've been missing for a long time at Liverpool. As the ball was up the other end of the field, how Alisson and Van Dijk
control the space behind.
Yeah, and were organising everything around them in front of them to make sure that when all those bodies were flying forward, that they weren't weak on the other way when they were if they lost the ball. And he says it was just the authority that he was shown rather than just standing there. They were actually doing something. And you can see him as well, just physically. You know, people talk about presence, whether a goalkeeper has a presence or whatever.
I mean, he allows Van Dijk to defend high up the pitch. I mean, I know that Van Dijk's quick, but you know, he basically, I mean, that was one of the things that Di Francesco really liked about Alisson at Roma, was that ability to kind of take that position almost on the edge of your penalty or outside your box when your team's high up the pitch. So that, you know, if they spring that offside trap, yeah, he can get to them while Van Dijk can.
But that's it. It's not sometimes when Lloris comes out, it's like really close sort of decisions, or it looks a little bit panicked, where he's already there and he's already, it gives himself more time to play easier balls.
Brighton, coming off that fantastic performance against Man United, are they going to take the same approach, do you think, at Liverpool?
I think they'll have to. I think it's unfortunate for them that they'll be without Doncic, who obviously went off in that game against United with an ankle injury. So Leon Balogun will come in. They're signing in the summer. But I think it'll be more difficult than it was against United. And Brighton haven't won at Anfield since 1982. So, you know, given that their defence already was conceding, an average of 5 goals against them last season, I think it's going to be tricky.
Yeah, they haven't won any of their last 14 on the road, indeed, in the Premier League, Brighton, while Liverpool are unbeaten in 22 straight home matches. Interesting.
If there's a weakness in the Liverpool armour, it's that back stick. From a Brighton perspective, if the diagonal ball's from right-hand side to left-hand side, then get Glenn Murray to pull on to Joe Gomez and Trent Alexander-Arnold. The two of them are quite sort of they're young ball watchers, so they often get caught underneath the flight of the ball or not aware of the people behind them. I think it was Arsenal last year.
United with Alexander-Arnold, that mistake.
Yeah, and it was Arsenal with Joe Gomez that they might be able to capitalise on that, but Joe Gomez so far has been great alongside Van Dijk.
Mm. The team that Brighton beat last Sunday, Man United, are in action this coming Monday night at home to Spurs. There's talk that Man United fans post-Brighton have funded a plane with a banner.
Oh, no.
To fly over Old Trafford. The banner's going to read Ed Out, L-U-H-G, which stands for Love United, Hate Glazers.
That'll do it.
Yeah, so it's not a Mourinho out, it's an Ed Out, Jules.
Well, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. It's less likely than Mourinho out. Ed Woodward is an enigma for me. I don't understand what he does. I can understand that his former job, in terms of marketing and sponsorship deals and all of that, what he was doing to bring the money at the club was fantastic, and he seemed very good at that. I'm just not sure he's a very good CEO. You know, I don't think he can manage a club of that
stature, size,
everything. I think there's probably a lot of things that he does well. I hope so. Otherwise, I guess he wouldn't be in that position. But in terms of the transfer market, in terms of dealing with the first team, in terms of his relationship with Mourinho and even some of his relationship with some of the players, I just don't think he's good enough. We talked a lot on the podcast last season about him being out of his depth at that club. And I think that this summer showed again how United can be in that position right now is beyond me.
Interesting. They have had performances like the Brighton one before. This is something we touched on
against Brighton last season.
Against Brighton.
I heard this feeling last season. It was a very similar performance.
But so often De Gea was their fig leaf. Carl Anker mentioned the stat on Monday that I think the last 14 shots the Spanish keeper has faced, he's conceded 10 goals. Is he regressing, David? And if so, why?
No,
I'm talking about De Gea, not Carl.
Yeah. It's a small sample size to say that that he's regressing. You know, he's played,
even during the World Cup,
he made mistakes, and obviously Spain didn't play well. They play a different system, so it's not easy for a goalkeeper to play in two different systems like that.
Okay.
Where you got control the space in front or play deep, but he's just got terrible defenders in front of him at the moment.
Has he?
Yeah, Lindelof's awful. He's not an elite defender, and he's a average defender who's not playing very well either, and obviously Eric Bailly, he's not making things any easier either.
Are there other options?
Well, you've got Jones and Smalling, but I mean they've got some there's six central defenders. You can see why they've turned around and said to him, well, you know, you're not getting the money for, who was it trying to bring in?
Maguire, Alvaro,
exactly, yeah.
Mina, Godin.
You can see why they haven't given the money, because look at the players they've got in front of them. They should be playing better than what they are.
It's up to Jose Mourinho to make those players better.
Better, yeah.
This coming Monday, do you anticipate him, you know, with all the trouble that's been going on, just to kind of do a classic Mourinho shut up shop, wagons in a circle?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look back last year, this fixture also came at quite a delicate time for United. They drew with Liverpool 0-0 at Anfield and kind of stunk the house out and got a lot of criticism for that. And then, as Jules said, they lost to Huddersfield away. So, and they just locked things down, and it didn't look like they were really going to get anything. And then they threw on Martial, and Martial got them a goal late on. So I think they'll be kind of similarly cautious. But if I was Spurs, how about Harry Kane is actually scoring goals in August? Yeah, I'd be looking at this and thinking this is as good a chance as they'll get to win at Old Trafford since they last did in 2014.
Well, this is statistically not only their toughest away game in the Premier League, but the toughest that any team, let me put that another way, no team has a worse away record in the Premier League than Spurs do at Old Trafford, Jules.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's a tough place to go for a lot of teams, but I agree with James. I think this is the right time for Spurs to go there, and they'll have to be on the front foot from the beginning. It's a United team that is struggling in their attitude. Mm-hmm. They're struggling technically. I think Fred is still working out how he's playing in that midfield three, and you know, and I think Paul Pogba in many ways is.
He's a leader, Jules. I would recognise him. If Winston Churchill was stood in front of me next to Paul Pogba.
Would you?
Same statesman.
But I think that there will be a time where the short holidays will take its toll on Paul Pogba's performances. But that's why I think it's the best way, whether Alexis Sanchez plays or not.
Apparently he's in doubt.
Yeah.
But he has launched a new underwear line.
Oh yeah?
Have you seen this?
No.
The pants. More power, more seduction, more attitude, more success.
Wow. Is it at the boxer shorts or pants?
I don't know if it's got... I'm not sure. I'm thinking... I didn't investigate. Something about Alexis Sanchez and pants. I just didn't follow that up any. But on a football note, you're saying that with Sanchez possibly out of the picture...
It's even worse, yeah. Because... Yeah.
Well, the thing is, I mean, Spurs have got the defensive capabilities to nullify United. United don't have that. Yeah, they don't have elite centre halves. They don't have elite full backs. Luke Shaw, no matter how many comebacks he makes, he will never, and how much he professes he wants to be one of the world's best full backs, will never be one of the world's best full backs. Never. And they don't have any protection in front of them either. In all fairness to them,
why will Luke Shaw never be one of the world's best full backs?
He just won't.
Okay.
He gives. Every game he'll give an opportunity where the player he's playing against, an easy opportunity, a chance to supply a very good chance. And whether it's through bad defending, what was the first game?
Against Leicester.
Yeah, against Leicester. Do you know, and he was looking for a foul against Jamie Vardy. Mm. You know, just clear the ball up the line. He was right to call him out, Mourinho, after the game, you know, to criticise him, because he just ambled up to the ball.
All right. Sorry about that, Luke. Hey, Alexis Sanchez not available, nor is Son, of course. But quick update on the Asian Games, where Son currently is. Mm-hmm. He scored the only goal of South Korea, got the win they needed against Kyrgyzstan to qualify for the knockout stages. Remember, if Son can get the gold medal in this competition, he gets to skip 21 months of staring across an icy DMZ. Next up for South Korea, Iran in the last 16, and then quarterfinal either Hong Kong or Uzbekistan.
It's crazy, though. When you think about it, he went to the World Cup and, you know, and Spurs are paying him. And then he went away again to play in the Asian. And there's also, on top of that, the possibility of him having to do his military service, whatever you say in English.
Yeah.
And, it is crazy.
That's, you call it military service in English.
Oh, okay. That's good. I was not sure.
So what do you call it in France?
Service militaire.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Although we don't have them anymore. You do like a couple of days. And,
yeah.
And
I'm not sure who does anymore, actually.
Well, it's clearly Son. Well,
potentially. Yeah,
I'm sure Denmark have national service, though.
Do they?
Yeah. And I think you have to draw lots.
Oh.
So like when I was at Silkeborg, they came with a... Yeah, it's literally
a bit
just
like
a bag
Mourinho
full,
against
bag
the big
full
clubs.
Of numbers.
He draws lots.
Oh, very good.
Sorry,
I'm glad you explained
that's your point. You draw lots for why?
To see whether you have to do national service or not.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's a lottery?
Yeah. I'm sure.
Wow, okay.
I'm sure somebody will tell me different, but...
All right. Excellent. Okay. Some people need to talk for fear of being forgotten. That's Mineriola talking about Paul Scholes, and you referenced his comments about some people wouldn't... Paul Scholes wouldn't recognise a leader if he was in front of Sir Winston Churchill. Interesting. This was presumably after Paul Scholes had made some comment about Paul Pogba.
Yeah, that he wasn't a leader, that he was not good enough in that game against Brighton. I didn't hear Paul Scholes after the Leicester game when everyone was praising Paul Pogba for the performance he had. I just find it strange that every time United lose, it's Paul Pogba's fault. Paul Pogba is not doing this. Paul Pogba is not doing that. Paul Pogba is not a leader. Paul Pogba is this. He didn't lose the game. He didn't lose the game just because of Paul Pogba. Paul Pogba was not good on that day. The rest of the team were not good either. They were worse players than Paul Pogba in that team. And okay, he was the captain. And as a captain, I think you need to lead by example. It's just not always Paul Pogba's fault. And
do you enjoy saying Paul Pogba?
Yeah, because everybody seems to talk about Paul Pogba so much all the time.
Isn't that because people expect Paul Pogba to play and have an effect on the game like Naby Keita has done for Liverpool? To have an actual...
But Naby Keita is not Paul Pogba. Paul Pogba...
Paul Pogba is Paul Pogba, we know that.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have the effect, doesn't have the sort of like the impact
Pogba.
That he has.
Not Valentin, just Paul Pogba.
Just Paul Pogba.
Yeah.
All right then. Monday, so Spurs to take it, you think?
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
All right. OK, and we know whose fault it'll be.
Paul Pogba.
Listeners, to celebrate the new season of the Totally Football Show, our friends at Beer 52 are offering you a case of craft beer for free. All you have to do is head to beer52.com/football. It really couldn't be any simpler. Beer 52 is the world's most popular monthly craft beer discovery club. They search out incredible and exclusive small batch craft beers from the greatest breweries on the planet. So whether you like hoppy Norwegian IPAs, Colorado porters or Belgian wit beers, you'll find something amazing in Beer 52's monthly themed crates. There's no minimum commitment with Beer 52. You can take this free case, try the beers and see what you think. If it's not for you, you can pause or cancel your subscription at any time. Get started today with your free case of 8 incredible craft beers, plus a copy of Ferment magazine and some bar snacks by heading to beer52.com/football. All you pay is the £2.95 postage. That's beer52.com/football. Beer 52, your perfect partner for the weekend's football.
Totally Football Live. Like the sound of that, listener? Well, it's happening twice in the months to come. At Queen Elizabeth Hall, first of all, on Monday the 24th of September. That's on London's South Bank. Michael Cox and Duncan Alexander, by night known as Oily Sailor, will be joining us at southbankcentre.co.uk for all your ticketing needs. About a week or so later, we're in Manchester at the Royal Northern College of Music, Friday the 5th of October, the date for that, when the panel will include Rory Smith and Daniel Storey. So Storey and Rory.
Ooh, nice.
For tickets, go to ctickets.com. Bosh. Who's going to be bottom come end of August?
Palace, clearly.
Yeah.
No, do you think?
No.
Well, at the moment, you've got four teams on nil point, Fulham, West Ham, Huddersfield and Arsenal, two of whom face each other. Here's Gavin being a bit cheeky. He says, which one is the better relegation battle this weekend? Huddersfield, Cardiff or Arsenal, West Ham? Jules.
That's a huge game for Arsenal. It has to be. They showed some positives, I thought, in that game against Chelsea away from home. They could have easily scored four or five goals in that first half.
Mm.
You can't miss those chances in those kind of games. It's impossible. Not at that level. But I think they showed some resilience to come back in the game. I think there was, going forward especially, a lot of encouraging things. Defensively, it was more difficult, but it was always going to be because of the way Unai Emery wants them to play, the changes, and how different it is to defend under Unai Emery than it was under Arsene Wenger, for example. So there was always going to be more work to be done defensively than offensively.
Mm-hmm.
However, they need a win now. They need to put all that together and actually keep improving, and those positives that we saw against Chelsea and maybe a little bit against City as well.
Okay.
Have to come to full strength then on Saturday against West Ham.
West Ham with Jack Wilshere presumably in midfield, making what'll be a nostalgic return to his former ground. In terms of the tactics here, James and David, a lot of people pointing at the kind of the weakness of the West Ham midfield, the lack of any kind of steel in there. Obviously, midfield a great strong point for Arsenal. Other people saying, though, that Arsenal's right side with Bellerin and Mkhitaryan represents a real Achilles heel for the Gunners. That, you know, the West Ham's, what's his name?
Masuaku.
Bingo. Yeah. That he might be a real threat down there. What do you boys think?
I think with West Ham, they just have to be more compact. They've often looked like a bit of a broken team. There's just no real connection between each kind of unit, the defence, the midfield and the attack. And I think that's often left Noble in particular looking quite exposed. And he's not the most mobile, but as the leader of that team, you know, he has to do a better job of communicating. So I would expect that Arsenal will win this one, and I think they have to, because yeah, I think it's understandable after those opening two games, tough fixtures, a difficult hand that Emery was dealt. That now, when they've got West Ham, Cardiff, Newcastle, Everton, Watford, Fulham to come between now, the next international break, and the one after that, this is where Emery really has to, I think, start gathering some momentum.
If they continue create chances like they did against Chelsea, then they should have no problem at all. West Ham being really poor defensively, especially against Liverpool.
Mm.
It really smacked of a side that took the manager's words very literally. I've played in sides where you've worked on a real sort of compact defensive organisation where you allow the team, the opposition, to have a lot of the ball. When you in the game, you're worried that much about that and about your shape and where you position on the pitch, you forget about actually playing what's in front of you.
Mm.
So like against Liverpool, they played that compact four, narrow four, high up. It was just meat and drink for Liverpool to get in behind and down the sides. So they need to solve that problem. Fabianski, to his credit, has played well the last two games, especially against Liverpool.
All right. Could have another busy afternoon. Nice for Jack Wilshere that he's gone to West Ham. I didn't realise this. He says his whole family were West Ham fans. He was a West Ham fan. He used to love him. He had all the shirts. So that's good.
Paolo Di Canio's, yeah. I think he
did. Was he particularly?
He was a bit of a Di Canio fan, yeah.
Okay. Jules, how much do you love Guendouzi? He's had the most touches of any Arsenal player this season.
Tackles and interceptions, the most in the league.
Mm. Most of any midfielder in the league, yeah.
Yeah, I like him a lot. I saw him after the City game, and he had all his family there. He was.
They're all West Ham
fans. It was
fans.
Big. Yeah, they were West Ham fans. I mean, Guendouzi has all the West Ham shirt. So let me first say that he's a Paris-born and bred kid, which obviously makes him very special. Paul Pogba.
Makes him quite average. Makes him very special. 50% of all the players everywhere are Paris-born and bred, huh?
Yeah. Well, no, it's just you know, they're the best. More seriously, the two games, when you're 19 and you've played, I don't know, a handful of games in the French top flight, but most of your career really in the French second division, and you arrive at a club like Arsenal, and okay, you do well in the pre-season, but it's only the pre-season.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be so strong mentally, I think, to be able to play in those games. After 5 minutes, when Raheem Sterling, you know, welcomes you into the Premier League by, you know, with a proper English tackle, English Premier League tackle, and steps on your ankle, and you think, okay, this is it, this is where I'm at, I'm 19. And I just thought mentally he did so well, even losing the ball in key areas at times, because that's what he will do. You know, he kept his head high, wanted the ball again, which is not what a lot of 19-year-old would do in that position. And I think I really like that about him. And he said to me after I saw him against City game, he said, "I was so apprehensive." I was really apprehensive before the game. But I don't think we saw that too much. And I think that's one of the... He's got loads of qualities, but that's the one for me that sticks out is that confidence he has in himself and his own ability.
Because a couple of months ago, he was in the French second division.
Yeah, completely. He played the whole of last season in the French second division. Hardly played in the French top flight before. And for him to be thrown out like that against City first, and he said, like, they were incredible. I mean, he said, like, the pace of the game, the rhythm, their movement off the ball, it was just like, wow. And I didn't tell him, but I thought, when you play like that and then you have Granit Xhaka next to you, who clearly doesn't help you, you know, that's not what Xhaka does. He doesn't help you. You have to have that resilience in you to go through that game. And what I thought was very interesting is that against City, especially, Unai Emery took off Xhaka and Ramsey, and Guendouzi stayed the whole game. And it would have been very easy for Unai Emery to take him off after an hour and say, "Well done, you've done well, you're 19 years old." But no, he kept him on. And then against Chelsea, I thought he did even better. That ball for Bellerin, that ball through, then Bellerin crossed for Aubameyang, should have scored. That's a wonderful ball. And when you're 19 and you play against Chelsea and you're capable of doing that, but also, like we said, defensively, he needs to improve, but I think there's something in him. I think he's very promising.
Was he a name even in the second division in France? Were you aware of him before Arsenal signed him?
Yeah, he played for
Paris, born and bred.
Paris born and bred. So, like Paul Pogba. He was in all the French teams from under 16 to under 21. So he was one of the most talented players of his generation. But then it's still the step from Lorient in the second division to Arsenal playing against City and Chelsea.
Right.
He's so huge that you were wondering, can he do it?
And is he enjoying himself?
Yeah, he was. He really was. And I think he has the potential to be an excellent player.
And also, maybe we'll get to see him start with Torreira this weekend as well.
Right.
Which is kind of why Jack Wilshere is no longer at
and
Arsenal.
And I think that's what would help him as well. I think he's much better on the ball and looking forward than having to defend a lot and put tackles in. He can do that, but I think Torreira would be a big help in it with him.
They need Torreira in there. They don't need Granit Xhaka. There's no Xhaka required.
Okay. And possibly Carlos Sanchez coming in for West Ham as they attempt to add a little bit of steel to the iron midfield. Stephen Berkery, by the way, just on the subject of Aussie rules football, because I think, again, it was Carl mentioning that Arsenal brought in an Aussie rules fellow for fitness coach.
Yeah.
I was taken aback by this, but Stephen points out that while AFL is a full contact sport, it's not a collision sport in the same way as rugby codes. And because it's played on cricket grounds, the emphasis is on aerobic fitness. An elite AFL midfield player will cover around 15 kilometres in a game, about 25% of that full pace. And the games go on for over two hours. So
it's a very physical sport.
Yeah. I went to watch it at the MCG. And there was a guy, I'd seen in newspapers the next day that he'd done his anterior cruciate ligament. And he tried for 10 minutes to get up and down. He just would not give in.
Right.
I seen a few of them in the restaurant later on. And these are big guys, real stacked guys. Stacked,
Stacked.
I'm not familiar with that sort of term.
It's a really good fun, it's a fun sport to watch as well, if you want. It's on BT Sport.
Okay. Good of course, point. Jack Wilshere, not the only man making a return to the Emirates. Fabianski back in town.
We have, yeah.
Yeah.
He's, like I said, he's done well in the first two games that he's played. It's unfortunate that he's just playing behind the West Ham defence.
Chan, a.k.a. Mark Woodruff, is excited about the fact that following Mancini at Man City and Arsene Wenger at Arsenal, you've now got Emery at the Emirates.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll see Mourinho at Scunthorpe. Can you leave that in?
Well, I don't know. Deary me. So, right. Also, still to record a point, are Fulham, who will be hosting Burnley on Sunday, that is. Burnley, who have Olympiacos away this very evening in the Europa League, this evening being Thursday. So that'll be an interesting game. And Huddersfield, who've had a rotten time of it, and they host Cardiff on Saturday. Excellent. All right, well, loads of other stuff to talk about from the Premier League. Also, plenty of headlines from around Europe as we head into another exciting weekend of football. We'll touch on some of those after this.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show, sponsors of Melchester Rovers. Find out more at RoyTheRoversOfficial.com.
Chi. Power. Never can succeed without a surprise. Your training begins tomorrow.
Wow, that's a montage. I tell you, that kid's beefing up. David, this is going to be quite the... Is it a dramatic denouement in No Retreat, No Surrender?
The killer move at the end is just brilliant.
Is it?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Oh, looking forward to that. Jules.
Yes.
What's all this about Thierry Henry joining Bordeaux?
Yeah.
First of all, Gus Poyet did brilliantly there when he came in, took them from relegation strugglers to Europa League.
Yeah.
And then what happened?
And then he was not happy with the recruitment in the summer.
Right.
I think he wanted himself to be a bit more involved.
Okay.
And it was not the case. The club is being sold to some American investors. So I don't think it's an easy context for him either. And then you saw that press conference, I imagine, right?
Not sure that I did.
So the reason why they're looking for a new manager is that Gus Poyet is going to be sacked, because after the Europa League win on Thursday, in the whole media press conference, he basically slaughtered, is the word, his owners, CEO, whatever you want, like directors, people at the club, for selling a player to Montpellier without telling him and not having a replacement in place already to sign. And literally it was like he went mental. And it's the best press conference I've seen in a very, very long time.
Oh, brilliant.
Of him sitting there, the poor Bordeaux press officer was trying to say, okay, this is it now. And he was, no, it's not. It will be when I decide it is. Next question. And they showed me a lack of respect. And this is not what you do. This is shameful. This is a disgrace. And literally slaughtered them for like 5 minutes.
Okay.
Obviously, the next day, he was out.
He's gone. Has he taken his assistant manager with him? Or, like Brighton, has he left his number two in the dressing room?
He hasn't. But, yeah, he's been the end of a bit of a torrid summer for Gus Poyet, who I don't think, as we know by those stories, is always easy to deal with. And now Thierry is in the frame. Thierry is number one on their list.
Is that going to work, do you think?
So he's interested. There's still a lot of details to be sorted out before he becomes officially the manager. But it's a club that, for example, tried to get Zinedine Zidane before he was even a manager of the second team at Real Madrid. They gave Laurent Blanc his debut as a manager when he was not a manager again. Mm-hmm. So it's something that they've done it before. And Thierry seems to be quite keen right now. Is it a step too high for him to start directly in a team that is top six in France? Maybe. I'm not sure. I think he's really itching to start now. I think I'm not sure what happened at Sky last year was really for him. And I think he knows that. I think he maybe felt a bit frustrated.
What do you mean by that? Do you think he feels that he's not suited being a pundit?
Yeah, I'm not sure he really enjoyed it. I don't know. He hasn't mentioned it to me, but I'm not sure that was his stuff. I think he much rather want to be a manager, but a number one right now. I think the experience with Belgium has been great, and working with Roberto Martinez.
When you chat, does he say things like, football is a game, my friend. You win or you learn.
There's always next weekend.
To be honest, they mostly just talk about Paul Pogba.
Oh, Paul Pogba. Yeah. Which Harry really likes, by the way.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I think there would be that appeal to him. Okay, I can finally be a number one. That's what I want to be.
Okay.
And yeah, the question is all, but it's the same for all those, it's the same for Frank Lampard at Derby or Steven Gerrard at Rangers. Are they ready? Is it the right challenge for them? Is it the right step? Or would you start a bit lower first and then, like Patrick Vieira, MLS first and then Nice in France? It's very similar. So it'd be interesting.
And how's he doing at Nice, Patrick Vieira?
Yeah, he did okay. I mean, the first game they lost it, they had 19 shot, one on target only. And I think he was really not having a proper number nine. Mario Balotelli was suspended.
Is he going to bring Balotelli back in now that
he's staying? He's staying now.
Yeah, no, but I mean, is he going to be frozen out or is...
No, he's suspended again for this weekend. That's his third and last game where he's suspended, so he will be back. But I think Patrick will do well there. I think he will do well. And I want to see Thierry. And on October the 27th, there's a Bordeaux-Nice where Thierry Henry and Patrick Vieira could actually be facing each other as managers, which would be incredible.
But with Thierry, it's probably been the case with Belgium. It's been like sort of him dipping his toe in the water, because a lot of ex-players, or while you're a player, you think, yeah, I'm going to go into coaching. And then when you start doing your badges, he did his badges with the Welsh FA, didn't he? Yeah. And it's not until you're actually doing the job, then you find out whether you really want to do it or not. And he's probably probably caught the bug, I think. Because, I mean, it's a cushy number that he has, getting paid a lot of money just to talk about football, which must be a luxury. You know what I mean? But
who would do that, David?
Yeah, well. Yeah. But he's obviously thought, well, yeah, this is for me now. He wants the job. That's what's accelerated it.
Okay. Also, in French managerial talking points, Thomas Tuchel's start with Paris Saint-Germain. Good? You impressed as a PSG aficionado?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a bit early to see his influence on the team, because Kylian Mbappé has only played 45 minutes, for example, so far. There's been no Edinson Cavani, who's injured. Neymar is just getting back into full fitness. So we don't really see yet Tuchel's touch, if you want. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's been good. I mean, they're going to cruise that league. It's more in the Champions League in September that we will see, you know, why he's really made
that. That's the big question.
Yeah.
Similar themes, I guess, for Juventus, who... off to a good start in Serie A. We've only had one game so far in the Campionato, but two massive fixtures coming up this weekend. Juve taking on Lazio, Lazio who got beaten at home by Napoli last weekend. And speaking of Napoli, they are at home to Milan in what's a particularly tasty-looking fixture, not least because Higuain will be back in Napoli and Carlo Ancelotti will be up against the Rossoneri for the first time since he left them as manager.
Yeah, and... Carlo Ancelotti was saying that that memorable game, an all-time classic in Serie A, in May 1988, Milan won 3-2 and got a round of applause from the San Paolo, and that always stayed with him. And he said that.
And that won them the title, didn't it?
That won them the title. Mm. He says it was that moment he realised that one day he'd like to either play or work at Napoli.
So okay.
It was a little bit like Ronaldo's story about the bicycle kick he scored in April at the Allianz Stadium was a big factor in him going to Juventus this summer. But
right.
So I think you can kind of combine the two in terms of renewed interest in Serie A, not just Ronaldo, that effect, but also with Ancelotti back and now with his old mates showing up at the San Paolo, Leonardo, the sporting director at Milan, and Paolo Maldini.
Paolo Maldini, all right. Looking forward to seeing Roma taking on Atalanta too. That'll be next Monday. Atalanta tonight up against Copenhagen in the Europa League. But they're off to their usual cracking start to the season. You can get more chat about all the things going on in and around the Serie A fixtures. A particularly eventful week this, and we detail all the talking points in Golazzo, which is out at the moment, with Gabriele Marcotti. There's also a totally Scottish football show, which this week, David, was going big on Kenny Miller's departure from Livingston. Yeah. Hey, Neil's got a question. Have you been watching Rangers under Steven Gerrard?
I have done, yeah.
Okay, so Neil asks... Well, he says, basically, has anyone noticed how well Rangers are doing under Steven Gerrard in England? He's completely changed the way the team play. I can't believe the difference. Last week in Maribor was very Walter Smith-esque.
They've been a poor side the last few seasons, obviously because of what's been going in the background, but he has changed it. You know, even that first game against Aberdeen, they end up drawing the game, but with 10 men for most of the game and still being the dominant side, and he's got them playing some really great stuff.
Right. They've just re-signed Carl Lafferty. Do you think that they could be a real challenger for Celtic this year?
No, but I think they can be a real challenger for Aberdeen this season.
All right. Okay, well, much more Scottish football chat with Andrew Slaven and company on the Totally Scottish Football Show. There's also the Totally Football League show. Boy, they got a lot to talk about this season. You got Bielsa at Leeds. James, you must be excited about that.
Yeah, no. I mean, there was, a draw with Swansea in midweek.
That was such a good game, I think.
Yeah,
but, really good game.
Yeah, incredible.
Right. With Bielsa, the question, I guess, is always how
Burnout.
Long will it last? But...
Did you see that? Do you remember the cooler in Marseille?
Of course.
And that, do you know why he sits on?
What does he sit on now in Leeds?
So he has a bucket that he puts upside down.
Yes.
To sit on what is usually the bottom of that blue.
Yes, yes.
And he says it's a very comfy bucket. It's just a bucket, he says. Well, no, Marcelo, it's not just a bucket. You're the only one in the whole world sitting on a bucket watching your team play, which I think is fantastic.
That is fantastic. Equally exciting is Steve McLaren's bold new direction with the QPR. Played 4, lost 4, scored 1, conceded 13. Is that going to be a long-term project, do you think, at this rate, Loftus Road?
Steve?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I think we'll see Ollie back there before Christmas.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
David, that's a bold chat.
But I think there was a question before. I think there was that question on about him. What should he do to change their fortunes?
Who? What was that?
He should shave his head. That's what he should do.
Who, Steve McLaren?
Yeah, of course he should.
Did somebody ask what Steve McLaren should do to turn it around at QPR? Yeah, and the answer is
shave his head. Yeah,
shave his head.
Yeah, at least crew cut it. I mean, he's got that little island at the front.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? He's hanging onto it, and I think that would make all the difference.
You should go full Richardson.
Full Richardson.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm now mentally, I'm picturing Steve with a shaving.
That's disguise wrong. Are quite that well, wrong. But
right.
Anyway.
On Spotify, smart speaker, and podcast platforms everywhere. This is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Back to the Premier League. Some exciting games coming up. Let's see. Newcastle taking on Chelsea in the Rafa Derby.
Yeah.
That'll be a big one.
The I did better than you at Napoli Derby.
Oh, that's true.
Newcastle Chelsea. Yeah.
Yeah. This finished 3-0 to the Magpies. Just last May, in fact, Newcastle had some big wins against not only Chelsea but also Arsenal and Man United at St James's Park last year. Is this where Rafa brings out the Rondon?
Yeah, maybe, to test that Chelsea defence. But it's what we were saying about Arsenal and the West Ham game. It's also, or even Liverpool, is to see, the continuation of Sarri's improvement. You know, if we saw the Huddersfield game, and then we saw the Arsenal game where there was, again, some very good things on the ball and some more difficult things defensively.
Right.
Which, again, was always going to be it's the same problem as Emery. It was always going to be harder for Sarri to implement his ideas defensively than offensively, I think. And Hazard was not, hasn't started either of those games. You would expect him to start this weekend.
Yep.
So it would be, again, to just watch Chelsea, and no offence to Newcastle, but really focus on this Chelsea team and see if you see a bit more of that Sarri's touch that we've seen a little bit so far, but not massively. It's not like Bielsa at Leeds, for example.
Could be one of those Newcastle performances with about 10% possession, but quite possibly a point at the end of it. How well do you think that Kepa's been getting on in goal for Chelsea?
There's been a couple of worries for me. Sort of late on in the first game against Huddersfield, a ball pumped into the box, and he took the ball, took the cross at a second attempt, and he just didn't really look very dominating. There was the big arm swing in the first goal against Arsenal, which probably cost him time that might have saved the ball. But we know that he's not a £70 million or €80 million keeper at the moment. You know, when they could have got him for £20 million 6 months ago, 8 months ago. They've paid well over the odds for him. But, people comparing him when De Gea came into English football and the time he took to adjust, he's ahead of De Gea is. At that point, he's 4 years older, he's a more solid goalkeeper, and the only thing remains to be seen is how much he's going to be involved in that, expect to be involved in that build-up play with Sarri, and how he'll adapt to that.
Yeah, I mean, when Milan signed Pepe Reina for free and Donnarumma didn't leave, there was a lot of speculation about maybe Chelsea going in for Pepe Reina, because Reina was such a big part of Napoli's build-up play. And a little bit like Edison, whenever anyone tries a high press and stops City's build-up, he had a range of options which he can just drop the ball into. And Reina was very good at that. I think that's something that I'll probably need some time to work on.
And that's the thing, people talking about Edison and Alisson redefining it. They're not redefining it, they're just doing it far better than everyone else. And even that first game, Kepi's trying to drop one ball into Morata. It got cut out by Aaron Moy. And so he is trying it, and a little bit better than maybe what Petr Cech is in the same way. But it baffles me that they would go out, even when they went for All Black. I mean, they bid £100 million for All Black and he turned them down. But he's not a type of keeper. I'm sure he'd be able to adapt, but he wouldn't be anywhere near as the way that Alisson and Edison do it. So why not go out and look for that keeper? And like you said about Pepe Reina, surely they've got him for free. They could have tested AC Milan if they wanted to get that keeper in. So it's just a bit baffling that they want to play that way, but they haven't got the exact right goalkeeper to fit that.
All right. You don't think he's adaptable enough to become
a keeper? But, yeah, he can, but he won't be... He won't be exactly what Sarri would want.
Okay.
Sarri would want an Alisson or an Edison. And there's not that many around, but there's probably better keepers with the ball at the feet than Kepa.
Moving on, Saturday, 3 o'clock, sees Bournemouth taking on Everton. Theo Walcott says, excited to have a character within Angry Birds Evolution. Download now, writes Theo Walcott, to play as me, Cenk Tosun or Gylfi. That is exciting, isn't it? That puts everything else in perspective. So, have you seen the Angry Bird that's been Walcotted?
No, I would check it out now.
Yeah, check it out.
Yeah, with my kids.
It'll stay with you.
Yeah, I'm
the
sure.
The image
yeah.
seared into your consciousness.
Phil Neville tells me that this is Everton's year. So, you know,
in Angry Birds?
Yeah, clearly in Angry Birds as well. So it's pretty impressive.
And really depressing.
And really depressing.
And
yeah.
really depressing. Dan Billingham says, after the news, you can finally play Angry Birds as Cenk Tosun and other Everton players. Which players could be used in... Oh, I like what you've done here, Dan. In classic computer games, e.g. Rene Higuita as Super Mario, Diego Costa as Street Fighter, and then he says something unpleasant about Peter Crouch in Tetris.
Oh, okay.
Could Luis Suarez be Pac-Man?
The Torreira's Pac-Man.
Really?
Isn't that his nickname?
Could Guendouzi be Blanca?
Guendouzi.
It's
Guendouzi. It's really? Guendouzi, not Guendouzi.
Guendouzi.
Can we... Yeah.
It's Marshall as well, isn't
no,
it?
No, it's not Marshall.
No? Anthony Marshall?
No.
Okay.
Martial.
Thank you very much.
Any other pronunciations?
Plenty. Terry Henry. We don't have enough time.
Lucas Digne?
No, yeah. It's not Digne.
What is it?
Ding. It's not. There's no accent on the E.
Paul Pogba,
that's easy.
Bernard right. Mendy.
Oh, anyway, Bournemouth are taking on Everton. Bournemouth, who are one of six teams on 6 points, maximum points for the Cherries. What are the odds on Eddie Howe continuing that streak? What do you think? I know Everton look good, haven't they, so far? But Bournemouth, the vitality?
Yeah, they will win. They will win.
Callum Wilson's playing really well.
Yeah, and Callum Wilson... We'll have an England cap this season.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm telling you right now, you can put money on it.
Jules, this would be a great opportunity for you to roll back, if you like, on those harsh words about the Richarlison signing. Perhaps they paid a bit much, but are you beginning to see why they signed
him? No, listen.
He scored 3 goals in 2 games?
Yeah, okay. He had a very good start of last season as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's just...
He scored against Bournemouth, actually, for last season.
But it's a bit like Kepa. Kepa is not worth £70 million... Pounds.
Yeah.
Richarlison is not worth £40 million either. That's the price they were quoted, and they said, you know, we're going to pay that. We have the money to pay. We really want him, Marcus Silva, etc. I don't think he's worth that money. He started really well. He started really well for Watford and then disappeared completely. Hardly played towards the end of the season.
That's because Silva left. The Richarlison whisperer moved on.
Yeah, maybe. And I hope he does well, and I hope he helps Everton. I just want to see the consistency I didn't see last year. He's a young player. He has some potential. I just think they pay way over the odds for him. And you know, they pay far too much. Even if he scored 3 goals in 2 games, good on him.
Someone
so you're like though. You're like Van Damme, aren't you? No retreat, no surrender.
No, it's not that. It's not that. It doesn't change the fact that they still pay too much. And if he scored 30 goals at the end of the season, he said, okay, that was money well spent.
Well, we'll come back to you at the end of the
season.
Yeah,
I just don't think he still has that consistency
so
in him.
Bournemouth to take this game, and it should be a good game, shouldn't it?
Yeah, it should be good, yeah.
One of the best bit of business that Everton did this season was getting rid of Ashley Williams. Did you see him last night?
Yeah.
I didn't see him last night.
Oh, my God.
Lost the head totally.
Really?
Yeah.
Was sent off.
So that's a big plus for me.
Okay. What about Crystal Palace then, Jules? Let's see how you do with that. So... You still think that they're going to be in trouble this year?
I don't think it's going to be an easy season at all for them. And right. You know, it's not that I don't like them.
What is it, George?
I don't have anything against Steve Parrish, Roy Hodgson.
Have an altercation with... Was it Steve Parrish you had an altercation with?
He didn't like the fact that heavily criticised...
It doesn't sound like you, Jules. You're usually so measured.
Yeah, measured.
Right. What did you say, Jules?
Some of his... the managers that he picked before.
When was this?
Maybe...
Were you on TV or something?
Yeah, a couple of years ago on another podcast.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. And then, funnily enough, not long after, he sacked the manager that, you know, was in place.
Right.
Because they were dreadful. So I wish Crystal Palace, their fans, Roy Hodgson, Steve Parrish, everyone involved in the club, their best season ever.
The Eagle.
Yeah, they can even finish Europa League... You know, top 8, easily, no problem. I just don't think it's going to be an easy season for them.
Okay. Well, there's no easy seasons in the Premier League.
Exactly. No. Yeah. But if Paul Pogba was playing for Crystal Palace, he would be a leader.
Well, you know, they play well. I mean, the game was tighter than the 2-0 margin suggested. The penalty, there was an element of controversy about it, the one that Salah won off Sacco. And that extraordinary Aaron Townsend moment when he cut in from the right... And you knew what he was going to do, but still, that curling shot. Beautiful, no?
You're comparing him with Arjen Robben there.
It was Robben-esque. Of course, Palace, this game will not have the services of the young prodigy Aaron Wan-Bissaka. So there's that. Also this weekend, it's the Claude Puel revenge game, Jules.
Ooh. Yes, it is.
Yes, Saints hosting Leicester. Right. Penguin of Truth, hello again, Penguin of Truth, says ahead of the Claude revenge game, do you think Southampton would be in a better, poorer or similar position if Puel had remained at the helm?
I think they should have kept him. And yeah. I think he had, and he presented them a three-year project where the first year was never going to be fantastic. He was arriving in a new country, new culture, in a new club, new team. He wanted to do well in his first year. And I think he did well in his first year. Okay, he was not, you know, Pep Guardiola's style of football, but he was still good and he was still solid. And you could see the season after was far different. So I don't think he would mind going back there, and he would be like, yeah, I need to beat them to get revenge and this and that.
Doesn't sound very Claude Puel, does it?
No, but he...
You wouldn't watch All or Nothing with Claude Puel.
Well, you still find him boring.
You know.
What's he like away from the cameras, Jules?
He's cool, but he has that incredible determination about everything.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Be the best, be the winner all the time. When we play a little game of football, when he used to be a pundit, you know, be a very good pundit, be... Yeah, he has that in him. Mm. And that's, you know, Anis, remember, he got injured because he took part of a training session with his own player because he wanted to be better at them, you know, beating them and doing well at training and showing them he could still do it, even at 50, et cetera, et cetera. So he has that determination.
What kind of player was he?
He was a like hardworking, water carrier, defensive midfielder with an incredible career. Monaco, I think he played like over 500 games for them.
Because he's got a curious injury track record, isn't he? Wasn't there another time when he got hit by a...
Yeah,
an implement.
Though. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nice fans were not happy with him, and they protested at the training ground. And one of the things thrown at him was a dildo.
It happens. Laugh, they always get thrown around at training grounds, don't they?
Deadly weapon. Deadly weapon. Yeah.
No, Jamie Vardy, of course. So,
no, who scored 12 away goals last year? Yeah, more than double any other player at Leicester.
That's a remarkable
big
statistic.
Blow.
So, that's a big plus for Mark Hughes' Southampton. Right. That is your Premier League fixture list this weekend. Hey, if you want to get odds on some of those fixtures, you're in luck, because here comes producer Ben and Paddy Power.
Thank you very much, Jimbo. I've got Lee Price from Paddy Power on the line, as always. Lee, let's start off with Liverpool v Brighton. Liverpool flying at the moment, haven't conceded a goal. Can they get four or more here?
I think the answer here is yes. I mean, they're capable of four or more in almost every game, of course, but the odds are very, very short. So our market is to score more than 3.5 goals, which is obviously four, and the price is 11-10, just better than evens. For a team like Man United, for comparison, that'd be around 4 or 3-1.
And you've got a money-back special on this game at Anfield, don't you?
We do, and it's frightfully generous. It's money back as a free bet if Liverpool win. And that applies to losing first, last, anytime goal scorers, correct score and what odds Paddy markets. Max refunds £10, and in retail, max stake £10.
Well, you mentioned United just before then. They're up against Spurs. Can you give me the markets here on Spurs to beat United and Harry Kane to score? Because he loves August.
Yeah, United will be parking the bus, no doubt, and hoping to survive, or Mourinho will. Spurs are a short price to win this one. They're 15-8. They're our favourites, despite being away from home. And Kane is odds on to score any time during this match, 10-11. If you want to double those two up, that gives you odds of around 3-1.
All right, Lee, finally for today, let's talk about the bottom of the table clash. Can West Ham finally get some points and beat Arsenal? And is Jack Wilshere going to score?
Possibly not. West Ham to beat Arsenal is a relatively lengthy 15-2, while Wilshere to score at any time is 5-1. So double together, that's 26-1. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that the odds of Arsenal finishing bottom at the end of August was 3-1, which Jimbo seems to have liked, but I don't think it's going to happen, sadly.
You can find out those odds and more at paddypower.com. All prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's 18 plus only, begambleaware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. David Priest, happy birthday on Sunday.
Thank you very much. I'll enjoy myself. I'll have one on you.
What do you got planned?
I am going to Lost Village. Little festival, like a boutique festival near Newark.
Okay. Nice. What, with bands and things?
Yeah, it's kind of like dance music, comedy.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Nice food.
Lost Village.
Lost Village, yeah. Look it up.
Sounds like I don't know, one of those places in the northeast which was abandoned because of the plague or something.
Like Blythe or Ashing or something.
Yeah.
Or like in The Prisoner, that place in Wales.
Talbot. Is it Port Talbot?
It's Port Talbot, that's the one. Jules, what do you got planned this weekend?
I'm going away with a lot of friends for a few days, holidays, four days, yeah, with our whole family and everything.
To where?
To the Cotswolds.
Right.
Yeah. With Ben Foster?
Not Ben Foster this time. Although we haven't spoken about Ben Foster and Watford.
That's true.
Well,
next time.
They're my best team.
Next time. And James, your plans?
I'm going to Turin, James.
Oh, of course you are. You're going to go and see Juve Lazio.
Yes.
And I've got a couple of big fixtures on the horizon for me.
Uh-huh.
It's Maidenhead Maidstone on Saturday lunchtime. Do tune in for that. It's on BT Sport 1, I assume.
Mm.
Kick-off probably about 12:30 or something. And then on Monday, I've got to go all the way to File. I say I've got to. And then on Monday, excitingly, I can finally make the trip to File to see AFC Filed play Harrogate.
Harrogate Town, yes.
Yeah. They've got filed away. Harrogate are filed away. I love that.
One for the archives.
Yeah, exactly. So, that's a bit late. That's a Monday afternoon. Bank holiday.
Nice.
Delights. Especially because Euston's closed and there's major engineering work.
Watch out for Danny Rowe, centre forward, scores a lot of goals.
Oh, yeah? Brilliant. Okay. Well, before that, I'll be back here on Monday because even though it's bank holiday, we are here doing that whole totally football show thing, so do hope you'll be joining us for that. Meantime, many thanks David and James and Julien for being with us, and we'll catch up with you soon on the Totally Football Show.
You've been listening to the Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And make sure you check out our other football podcasts, the revamped Totally Football League show with Caroline Barker and the brand new Totally Scottish Football Show. Supporting your team can be a beautiful thing, but then come the injuries, the goal droughts and the downright disastrous defeats. That's a little bit like life, really. And here at the Totally Football Show, we believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the good days and the bad. And that's why we're continuing to work with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. On average, 12 men take their own life every day in the UK. So that's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. And part of the problem is that many of us still feel uncomfortable talking about mental health and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it the most. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that CALM is there. Every day from 5 p.m. till midnight, CALM provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about CALM.